hammer and fist. This is a fist in the system. If you think this is a metaphor, for all you ain't fucking listening. This is a mantra and a chant from a voice in the sea. Cause I ain't following the swallowing these hollow incantations of exploitation. They keep advocating, building on false foundations, based on sweat and shout nations. I say don't wear it down, tear it down, take the wealth, share it round. Without workers, you see there being all societies to be found. The rich keep thieving, but they'd have us believing that it's fair. To the lion's share, go to those who have a need for it. Babies are starving while they're calling brand names in their back. And you wonder why I say China and attack. Hell yeah, I'm a socialist. You notice by the way my words flow. This ain't no joke, and every word that I've spoken to show this. Capitalism is a prison of greed. Fuck what they want, I'm interested in what the whole world needs. With a lift, with a wind, with a noise in your hand, with a voice when the pulse.
Okay. Good evening, everyone. Tim Gatto, and you're listening to Tim Gatto, unedited and uncut. And tonight we got some people coming on show, and the title of the show is "What Happened to the Baby Boomers?" We have John Rachel, who's an activist and author. Excuse me. We have Rob Call, publisher of Op-Ed News, and Daniel Geary, who's a climate change activist. And we're going to talk about, you know, what our generation has done and where are they. And because lately I've been hearing a lot on alternative media and different places that say that people, men over 60, all they do is, people over 60, all we do is sit around and listen to Fox News, which isn't true. And our generation has done a lot more than people think. What's going on,
Tim? Tim, I need the number to call in.
Okay, it's number is 516.
Excuse me, 516.
453. 9450. Right. And okay, we're having trouble with some of the guests calling in. The call-in
right.
Number is 516-453-9450. And number again is 516-453-9450. And so none of the guests have shown up yet. So meanwhile, we're going to talk about, you know, where the baby boomers are, you know, where the people over 60 are. And there's a lot of us. There's Ray McGovern. There's old Medea Benjamin, a whole bunch of people that are protesting and leading activist charges. We're all not Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. We're all out there. And here we go. Hello. Hello. Hello.
Hello, Tim.
Yeah.
Okay, am I on the right line here? Dan
Geary. Yeah, you're on the right line. You're talking to me, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Oh, is this Daniel?
Yes.
Okay,
call
this is
me
Daniel
Dan.
Geary. He's a climate activist, and we're waiting for Rob to call in and John Rachel to call in. They haven't called in yet. You didn't get
okay.
The email that I sent you?
No, and I sent one back saying I didn't get it, but such is life, you know. But anyway, your wife gave me
well,
the
Well, you're on
here
now, so that's good enough. And
yeah.
I was just telling the listeners that we're talking about the baby boomers and, you know, what happened to them. And, you know, if you listen to a lot of alternative media, we're all just sitting around watching Fox News and supporting Donald Trump.
well, I I guess I'm an exception to the rule.
Well, I don't think you're an exception
to say the least.
I don't think you're an exception to the rule. I think that, meanwhile, let's talk a little bit about, what have we done, in our lifetimes? I mean, what has our whole generation done? I could think of a million things, starting off with like Bob Dylan and the whole, counterculture revolution.
Yeah, absolutely. I'd have a few prefaces to anything I say. I'm hearing a little bit of an echo here.
Okay, that's probably my speakers.
Yeah, I imagine.
Okay, go ahead.
Okay, so are we live right now?
Yeah, we're live right now.
Okay, well, first of all, I was born in 1947. My father was in World War II in the trenches, got a Purple Heart, got shot up twice, came back and had me. So, I'm one of the results of World War II. But the first thought that when you talked about the topic was a line from Mark Twain, my favorite author ever. He said that we should be, it was some essay he wrote, he said we should be born in old age when we're about 70 or 80, and then go down in age into our youth and then to infancy and then back into the womb. That way we would have the wisdom to know what the hell we're doing, as time goes along. Because as it is, the average human being, well, any human being, is born into a culture and a society and, all sorts of expectations and often typically a religion and culture, whatever, and that's what they assume is normal and correct. I can personally talk about myself. I don't like to talk too much about generations because it's such a huge overgeneralization. Every person is different, and every person is different, period. 7.5 billion people on the planet, and each one is unique. So, I start kind of from that premise, and I can talk about my own life and, my thoughts on my this generation, and being born in 47, I'm one of the first baby boomers. So I have a lot, I've seen a lot and have many, many thoughts, could write a book on, but let me just deal with a technical matter. I'm still hearing an echo.
Okay, hold on a second. Let me see if I can stop that. Are you still hearing an echo?
Let's see. Let me talk a little bit. No, I am not at the moment. Yeah. There was even a video I saw a couple of years ago. I think it was The Strange Tale of Benjamin Button or something like that. And it was a guy who was actually born when he was about 80, and regressed in chronologically, years went along, but physiologically he got younger and younger and younger. And so it actually paralleled what Mark Twain was talking about. But, there's all this talk about the greatest generation. Who did that? Tim Brokaw, I think it was. But, these are the people who brought us the atom bomb, who brought us World War One and Two, who got capitalism off to a grand start, got us into consumerism and overpopulation. When I was born, the population was less than half of what it is now. So, you know, you want to blame that generation? You want to blame our generation? I have many disappointments with people that I knew in my younger years. I was always very active. I was a little bit of a late bloomer in the sense that I wasn't actively, really very actively as I do now, following the news. But I was in the SDS movement in college. I went on countless marches over the years and protests and advocated for Dennis Kucinich, Jill Stein, and Rocky. I ran for Senate and against Orrin Hatch here in Utah in 2012. I lived off the grid from 1983 till 1997. I have a patent on solar airships that are the most efficient model ever done. They could actually transform aerial air transportation. I've got a patent on a children's toy. I've written a couple of books that I'm still trying to get out there. Some are already out there. I built a solar greenhouse. I wrote a book about the solar greenhouse. You know, I taught school for 25 years, did a lot of science with elementary kids, tried to get them to think clearly for themselves. And, you know, it was horrified, for example, when Reagan got in, just absolutely horrified. And a friend of mine, a very close friend of mine, contemporary in age, and he told me that he woke up the morning after Reagan got elected, he said he couldn't believe the birds were still singing. So, at least, you know, that is just, you know, kind of touching the surface. But, you know, I've been absolutely active all the time. And, you know, I haven't been into materialistic stuff. You know, I like to ski. I had a Hobie sailboat on the Long Island Sound many, many, you know, back in the early 70s. But I was definitely not trying to win a prize on Wall Street or anything. So
did you say the Long Island Sound?
Yeah, I grew up on Long Island. I recognize the 516 area code here. I was in Syosset.
Oh, yeah, I
know.
I was in Huntington.
Yeah, right next to Oyster Bay. Most people know Oyster Bay. Yeah, I went to a concentration camp called St. Dominic Catholic School for 12 years, but I survived it somehow. I did have some good teachers in retrospect, but that's where I grew up, and then I loved to ski, and that's why I wound up in Utah for powder skiing, you know, and now we're seeing with climate change, all kinds of things coming down, astounding things coming down. You know, one is loss of snow, but it's going to be a lot more coming down. Just yesterday, I did an interview with a friend of mine who works for a radio station. She's a producer for a radio station. And we did a 1 hour and 15-minute interview with Guy McPherson, who's, I think he's about 51 or 2, but he is, in many people's opinion, mine definitely, the world's leading climatologist. He was a conservation biologist, which is how he got into that. But, you know, he's the one who's talking about abrupt climate change and showing the, you know, relying on scientific literature, conservative scientific literature, and, you know, going with that and showing how what danger the whole human species is in, which I've been, you know, aware of since at least the 70s. And I had one biological son and had a vasectomy long, long ago because I saw the hazards of overpopulation. So, you know, it's, you know, I'm not boasting about any of this stuff. I have no need to get credit or anything, but I, you know, I will say what I've done and say, yes, I am disappointed in the so-called baby boomer generation. They could have done a lot better. I don't know what happened after the 60s. It seemed like a lot of really good things were coming down at that time. The marches in Washington, I didn't attend those, just, you know, didn't get there. But, you know, listen to, for example, anyone listening, listen to Country Joe and the Fish. What's the name of the song? Be the first one on your block to have your boy go home in a box.
Yeah,
an incredible song. You know, it's still one of my favorite songs ever. Or listen to John Lennon in an interview he did talking about the insane people in charge and saying, what the hell are they trying to do? I can't even decide what they're trying to do. You know, and then the CIA takes him out with a proxy as their modus operandi. When I was born in 1947, was when the CIA with Alan Dulles came into existence. And before that, it was already in existence. I think it was the OSS, Office of Special Something or Other. I wasn't even aware of it till what they were doing until after many documents, decades and documents came by. And it was only actually within the last year that I read the actual story, JFK and the Unspeakable, by James Douglas, showing how, you know, it was an internal government plot to bring him, to assassinate him. It's a whole story in itself. I won't even try to go into it. You know, I could say the same about 9/11. I'm glad to see there's a grand jury investigation about to open. I have my doubts about the outcome of it, but at least it's happening. And that is people my age bringing it into existence, and younger, architects and engineers and truth seekers.
Yeah, I'm not knocking the younger generation or the generation that came before us.
Yeah, I'm not knocking any generation, really. I'm really not. And that's kind of my point. It's like you can't – I just don't think it's a valid line of thinking. You look at any religion, any culture, any society, it's a bell curve of people, you know. For example, here in Salt Lake, you know, it's largely Mormon. Actually, it's in Salt Lake proper where I am, it's the Mormons are less than I heard they were like 40% or less. And, you know, so it's you can't generalize. And then, I, you know, we have neighbors. Well, our neighbors just moved, unfortunately, but was a black guy and his white wife and Mormon, and he had been many religions and a bartender at one point, and he was a military brat and traveled around the world, got to meet, his father made him go out and meet people all around the world, so he was exposed to all kinds of people, you know. And he was telling me last we talked, he said, I may not be a Mormon too much longer, you know. And his wife says, you know, I am the least Mormon person you'll ever meet. But on the ranks, on the rolls, they're considered Mormons. So, but how can you, you know, you can't generalize. And you get the other extreme, like Orrin Hatch, the guy I ran against, you know, for federal senator. The gaseous turds float to the top. I think that's true probably in every human gathering of grouping of people.
So, yeah, I wonder about these politicians. I wonder how many of them are true believers, or they use their religion to get votes.
Many do, clearly. I mean, I was totally blocked. This is one example. You know, in 2012, when I ran against Senator Hatch on the Justice Party ticket with Rocky Anderson running for president, I was totally blacked out. I mean, I couldn't get a letter in a single college newspaper, of which there were, I think there were six that I wrote to. I had the editor of the Salt Lake Tribune tell me to my face, with my wife standing there, we're not going to publish even a letter from you. And, you know, I had a letter that was responding to one of their humorous columnists that I really like, and they weren't even going to run that. They told me to my face. The Deseret News was going to run a letter, just a simple letter, let alone, you know, talk about covering me or interviewing me. And they were going to run it, and then all of a sudden, you know, after a week or so, I got an email saying they couldn't run it without any reason given. The so-called debate that they only had the Democrat, who was Orrin Howell, I think was his name at that time, and Orrin Hatch. And the guy from the Constitutional Party had heard about that coming up, and he called. It was the BYU, a Mormon college in Provo. They were putting it on, and this guy, who I got to know pretty well from the Congressional Party, said he really wanted to be in that debate. He told them, and they said, "Well, we'll let you know when it's going to happen." And they didn't. They wouldn't have anybody on but the Democrats and Republicans. Now, that's not unique to Salt Lake. You know, it's across the board pretty well, but it's particularly acute here in Salt Lake, or in Utah, I should say. So.
Right. Yeah, well, you know, that's just a two-party duopoly, you know, and it's like, you know, they say this is a democracy, but, you know, you get to vote for who they put up, you know, especially like with Bernie Sanders. I mean, you know, he had the momentum, he had the turnout, and DNC stole it away from him. And
he had a lot of my money. He had a lot of my money too. I came back.
He had my money too. And
I made bumper stickers for him, you know. And then when he did that 180 degree turn, you know, if you watch that video, which you can still find online, he was clearly not happy. In fact, I did an article on it for Op Ed News, and it was I found it somewhere else. It was a lady. I just did a link to the other article, but this lady who was a body language analyst for a living, and she was talking about every movement that he did in that like 5 or 10 minute turning over to Hillary and going, in effect, really 180 degrees the other direction, completely. And she was saying how he was totally unhappy. He was not behind what he was saying at all. And to me, it was pretty obvious that she was correct on her. It was about 15 points, you know, with his tongue in the cheek and the tightening of the hands and, you know, these different signs that people give off when they're talking. So I was really bent out of shape with him. I still am. You know, we just sold, I just read an article on this today, or a comment. It was, we sold 127 F-35s that were made largely in Vermont. I don't know if they were all made there, in Bernie's state, to Japan, to the tune of roughly $110 million a piece. And this is projected for maintenance over a course of 55 years, running into trillions of dollars. This is Bernie Sanders, you know. And I see him and Elizabeth Warren. I like the words they say. I like a lot of things they say. But when you really look at their actions and their votes, they're just not in sync. You know, I'm much more pleased with what I see in with Alexandria Octavia Cortez, I think her name is. And,
yeah, Alexandria Ocasio Cortez, yeah.
Yeah, and then well, there's a couple that I'm pretty impressed by, and I had my name in this year actually to run as an independent because I didn't need the dates were the date line for signing up was much later. That you didn't need signatures and all this and that, but you still, it was up to you to get your name out there and as a sign-in vote. And I put my name in probably in about May or so to run for federal senator from Utah. And I wavered back and forth for about two or three months, trying to decide, you know, what do I really have to offer? And the answer was, I really didn't have anything to offer. And, you know, and on top of that, I just don't want to dive into the freaking cesspool, you know, and play all these games. So I pulled my name out for that reason. And, you know, plus I'm 71, and I just would rather. I've got other things that I consider important that I'm doing, still working on, that are more important than playing political games.
You know, when you look at Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders, they're both millionaires, you know, and
yeah,
and Elizabeth Warren, she's worth, last I heard, she was worth like $6 million, and then when you look at the sanctions that they put on Russia, and the way they support Israel, I mean, and the things that they vote for. You know, they don't put their money where their mouth is. You know what I mean?
And that quickly brings to mind this whole thing about Russiagate, so-called. You know, not one shred of solid evidence has been presented after 2 years with this guy Mueller, who's been a whitewasher forever, you know, head of the FBI, and like a total... totally opposed to human progress, basically, and people are cheering him on. We had detente with Russia for 20 years. I was so happy when the Berlin Wall came down, you know, and then what do? We prop up a puppet. I forget the guy before Putin, but we propped him up, and all, you know, we're supporting all the oligarchs over there, and, you know, and then Hillary made it her... cause célèbre, however you say that word, you know, after she lost. And, you know, she was for every war we ever had. If you watch her, if you look at the history of Libya, which is a totally democratic country, probably the most, they wanted to not be on the U.S. dollar. Anyone who doesn't not want to be on the U.S. dollar is in trouble. So we get rid of Gaddafi, who was an incredible person. Really, you know, you look at him, you know, you got to do some searching, given the way Google searches come up these days and whatnot. Go to other websites and whatever, or search engines, and look him up. And, you know, he was, like, one of the best people you could possibly want. I'd be honored to have him in our government.
And
you can see the video of Hillary saying, laughing her ass off, knowing that we went over there, we assassinated him, but before we assassinated him, we tortured him. We stuck a bayonet up his anus and rolled it around, you know, and tortured the poor guy. And Hillary is laughing about this. She's a psychopath. She should be locked up completely, you know.
Well, she's
my generation. Well, she's a very different person. Let's put it that way.
Well, she's the one that had Victoria Nuland take $5 billion and give it to the people in the Maidan, who a lot of them were neo-fascists, and overthrow the Poroshenko government, and then say it was the best $5 billion we ever spent. And
it's incredible. And the more you look at the Clintons, who I was once for, I was once very much in favor. And back in, let's see, 1987, one of my two trips back to Long Island, we were in a rental car and driving around on Long Island, and I was seeing all these anti-Hillary Clinton bumper stickers. I thought, what the hell, you know, I thought she was okay. And when I got home, I looked her up online, and all our votes were very, very good from at that time, anyway. Very much socially oriented, in favor of education and preschool programs, that kind of thing. And I thought, you know, what the hell? But as time went on, I looked closer. It's like, holy shit! You know, these guys are just serious psychopaths, and you know, out to dominate the world, and whatever it takes to do it. So
Hillary,
you know,
Clinton.
I'm horrified by many in my generation. Absolutely.
There was never a war that Hillary Clinton didn't like. You know,
exactly.
And look at Libya now. I mean, at one time, if you got married in Libya during the Gaddafi reign, they gave you $5,000 and a house. Everybody had universal health care. If you wanted to go to college, they would send you to any college you wanted to go to anywhere in the world. And
they had great education,
That was Gaddafi's regime. And all of a sudden, you know, we painted him into this bad guy. And we got France and Great Britain to help us bomb it to smithereens. Now it's a failed state where they have slavery. And, you know, this is what Hillary Clinton brought us.
And, you know, it's, you know, this makes me think in general of the Internet, which I think is perhaps the best invention humankind has ever made. I mean, there's other things that are up there, Hubble telescope, rollerblade, the Roscosmos skis I have. But aside from that stuff, the Internet is like the nervous system of the planet, sprang up overnight like a mushroom just about, you know, any kind of, you know, geological timescale. It was overnight. It was in less than overnight. And it had the potential to do enormous good. It still does. But it's being taken over by these power-tripping people and corporations who run the, you know, power-tripping people who run corporations and hide behind the corporate mask that even the ACLU defended in that decision to have money talk and people walk, so to speak. So, there's a lot of worms in the woodwork. There's no question about that. And that's been true all along. There were people speaking out against World War One and Two. We knew that we provoked Pearl Harbor. The Japanese were trying to surrender. We wouldn't let them. You know, anyone who, if you look into history a bit, and you got to realize everything that you see today has very, very deep roots in history. And you follow them back, and I don't care who you are, you're going to be amazed, you know, if you really do your homework on these things. And I apologize to millennials and to anybody younger. I mean, like I said, I taught elementary school for 25 years, and I was teaching a lot of science, a lot of biology. We did field hikes. We grew a garden in the woods one time. We talked about pollution. We talked about nuclear weapons. In fact, I got hauled into the principal's office for showing that film one day. But it's not like there haven't been people trying to get the course of history going in the right direction. And I think, you know, one of the biggest problems is the population and capitalism. Well, unfettered capitalism, let me paraphrase that. Just runaway capitalism, everybody out for himself. And when people cooperate, they can get so much more done than when they're competing against one another. There are places for competition, I agree, but on serious issues, we should be cooperating. We are one species on one planet. There's no getting around that, you know? And I feel privileged to have the life I've had, looking back, especially, you know, I wasn't cognizant of it at the time because, you know, we were, well, we didn't have the internet for one thing. And so the CIA was going on doing all these clandestine wars here and there around the world and assassinating President Kennedy and whatnot. You know, I was in, I think, my junior year in high school when that happened. And, you know, we didn't know anything but what we were fed by the press, which is already back then even, you know, largely bought out. Now it's totally bought out, the mainstream press, that is. So, you know, I rarely go to any mainstream websites except by accident. And, you know, if they're being criticized on, say, the Jimmy Dore show or Lee Camp or something like that, you know. But, yeah.
Hey, I watch a lot of Jimmy Dore. I watch a lot of Lee Camp. Kyle Kulinski and you know, Joe Rogan. And, you know, I don't ever watch, well, once in a blue moon, if I hit it on YouTube, I'll watch, you know, a little bit of CNN. You know, I won't watch MSNBC. You know, I watch a lot of RT. You know, and RT, I think, is like, RT America, at least, is like one of the most free and honest reporting, you know, around.
I've got, you know, websites I kind of go through roughly in order every day, not completely, but the first one is actually, I just plug in the letter so it comes up so I don't have to remember it, you know, like a phone number, but the second one is RT, you know, Russia Today. I think it stands for Russia Today. They got world and international, and they have really, I think, objective reports. And Al Jazeera, same way. You know, I think they're very open and honest and upfront. I feel much more comfortable on those sites. The first one I was trying to mention was Information Clearinghouse. And they have some really good writers, you know, that I totally respect. There's once in a rare while I see a writer that I'm not.
Okay, hold that thought. We got Rob Kaur calling in.
Yeah, okay.
Okay. Hello, Rob.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing good. We got Daniel Geary on here, and we've been talking for a while, and I'm glad you could make it.
Hey, Dan.
Hey, Rob, how are you doing? Good to hear your voice.
All right.
Yeah. And I would, given in the line of our conversation, I would point to Rob Call as another one of our so-called baby boomer generation who has done amazing things with his life. You just, you know, just go to Op-Ed News and look at his bio, and, you know, you'd just be blown away. So, you know, there's just a whole range of people in every generation.
Dan. You've also done some amazing things too. You're quite an impressive guy.
Some people don't think so, but yes, some do.
Same with me.
So
basically, what we're talking about is what happened to the baby boomers. What happened to our generation? All of a sudden it peaked and all of a sudden it just disappeared. You know, except for there's still a few of us running around like Medea Benjamin and all these people, you know, we're still out there. You know, where's the rest of us?
Well, you know, I just went to my 50-year high school reunion. And an awful lot of the people who are baby boomers have I'm retired, I'm done, and I'm finished attitude.
That's profoundly disturbing to me, you know, but I see it too, of course. It's tragic. It's, you know, one of the main points I think I was trying to make was that, you can't generalize about any generation. There's all kinds of people. It's a bell curve in any human conglomeration, culture, religion, whatever. And you get extremes on both ends and everything in between. So you can't really generalize. I mean, I see young people like 15 years old crying out loud, talking out about climate change to, you know, major politicians and really whipping their ass as far as I can see. So, you know, there's it's up to individual people to be the person you want the world to be, so to speak.
Yeah, you're right there. And, like, I see a lot of these kids, even in South Carolina, the younger kids. I'm not talking about the millennials. I'm talking about the generation before that. These kids are pretty savvy.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. And I think it's because of the internet, because you have all the information right at the fingertips, and you can fact check these people. And these kids are doing it.
Yes. Yes. And I would say that, you know, to anyone complaining, I first of all, I understand completely. I complain too. But that's time wasted that could be better spent doing something constructive. And we may not have a positive outcome. That's, you know, at this point, I am quite convinced, you know, that either nuclear war or climate change is going to do us in. But at the same time, I think we've got to just keep pushing forward and doing what we can. That's all we can do. You know, as humans born into this situation we're born into.
Right, right. So, yeah, I think the world is headed to its nuclear war because, the mainstream media keeps pushing this narrative that Russia's out to get us and trying to keep a Cold War going so the military-industrial complex can make all their money. And it's all about money. It always has been.
And you pull back the skin on that just a little bit, and you'll see that's actually untrue. And that's why I recommend, again, Information Clearinghouse on the international scene. And then second, Russia Today, you know, they have news and then international. They look like the same site to me, but whatever. You can get as Paul Harvey used to say, the other side of the story, which is, with all the facts that are supported, you know, and the side that we're presented through the mainstream media here across the board, you know, TV, radio, newspapers, whatever, it's just a lot of BS.
That's why op-ed news is so important, you know, and sites like it.
I went to op-ed news. I forget when you started it, Rob, but when I was
2003.
Yeah, okay, that's about right. And then I remember, you know, after 9/11, I was walking to my classroom one morning, you know, like about 8:10. I'm walking by another teacher's classroom, and there she's got the news. Her door is open, the news is on, and they got the towers being. I don't think they were coming down at that time, but they were being hit. You know, I went to my classroom and I made a diary page to myself, which I've since lost. But I remember the first line, and I said, "Who the hell did we piss off now?" And, you know, I was actively following that and trying to track it down. I was looking at Robert Fisk, who did a lot of writing for The Guardian. But the first site I came across that covered it the most was Op-Ed News. That's kind of what got me in there. So, anyway, a little bit of history.
Yeah,
there.
We've probably got at least 1,000 articles about 9/11.
Yeah, yeah. And leads to others. Yeah.
Yeah, I remember I had John Feltzer on this channel here, and they didn't want to put him on because he had questions about 9/11, and they totally forbade
Feltzer
that.
Feltzer or Fetzer?
Fetzer, yeah.
Seltzer or Fetzer?
Fetzer.
Fetzer, yeah.
Yeah, Fetzer from Chicago.
Yeah, we were talking about him the other day at the when the three senior and managing editors and I got together. The op-ed news people got together, and we almost had a consensus that he may be agent provocateur.
Counterintelligence.
Agent provocateur.
Right.
What? I'm sorry, I missed the person's name. John, what?
Fetzer.
Okay, I'm trying to...
And why do you think that, Rob?
Because the stuff he has put out was so bizarre and unbelievable. Like, I think he said that there were, like, lasers from outer space or something that caused the towers to go down.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, that gets me riled up pretty quickly. Yeah.
He didn't mention that on my show. I had the girl who wrote Where Did the Towers Go? Dr. Judy Wood. I had her on my show, and she was on my show from an undisclosed location because two of the people that were working for her got shot in the head right in the head, and there was nobody around, so and they got shot
That's
in the head
scary.
Anyway. And yeah, that was scary, and so she was afraid for her life at the time, and she wrote a book, and she didn't put the blame on anybody. She just said, it looked to her like a directed energy weapon, and because the towers just turned to dust.
What is a directed energy weapon? I don't understand what that is.
A directed energy weapon is where they take concentrated microwaves and they hit it at a certain point, and things just evaporate. And
do they really exist? I don't know.
They do.
That sounds like something
from
Star Wars.
Lasers are directed. Lasers are a directed energy weapon, and we actually have them in our defense arsenal right now.
Yeah, I've seen. Yeah. You can find them online, see videos of them, and they're pretty convincing. I've done a fair amount of work on that, reading on that, and they can target anybody and or anything, and just take it out, vaporize it.
Oh, I'd really love to see a link that shows him something like that destroying a huge building. That would be interesting.
But
I'm very skeptical. I mean,
there was
I could
one
see
thing
a laser maybe burning
book.
A hole through a, something, but taking down a skyscraper, that's a different story.
I have zero doubt that was controlled demolition. I mean, I don't. Anybody who's looked into that, I don't see how you can conclude anything else. And I've spent umpteen hours. I had serious OCD after 9/11. Researching for a couple of years. I was about designing models. Just for example, I had it on graph paper. The tower was off official dimensions. It was roughly speaking 4 feet high and 2 feet by 2 feet square. I might be a little off there, but if you had a loaded jet going from the east to the west, they fill up totally full of fuel going that direction, and it would amount to, on that scale, one drop from a medicine dropper, from an eyedropper, and that jet fuel was supposed to have brought down the whole building, and it just didn't happen that way, so.
You were mentioning before they got that grand jury investigation that's opening up in New York that they've been pushing for since a long time, and we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, there was an article or two on Op-Ed News on that. I think Lance Cipiello put it on there, but I'm not positive. But yeah, I've been following that, you know, as I see it come up, which, you know, you got to kind of look for it to find it. But that would be wonderful if it happened. But there'd be so many people, high people, you know, in the government and on down through layers of government, hung out and, you know, locked up, ideally. But there's some very powerful forces behind the scenes at work that have enormous networks of connections that, you know, we don't know about, from all I can see. And I do a lot of reading on this stuff and watching videos and whatnot. So.
Yeah, right.
But you look at what World Trade Tower 5 was it that Larry Silverstein, who had just bumped his insurance up on it, and he said on the news, "Yeah, I had it pulled because it was getting dangerous." That means, in controlled demolition terms, that's what you say when you want it to go down. You say, "Okay, pull it," you know, and all the explosives are in place, and these are explosives that in those cases of towers where they literally vaporized things and they hauled off everything and sent it to China before anyone could do any forensics on it. Stephen Jones, I think was his name, a professor here from Utah at BYU Brigham Young University, a physics guy, he said that there was they were high energy explosives, and I forget what the name was exactly, but he was got early retirement from Brigham Young University, moved down to Spring City, which is about an hour south of here, and it was because he was speaking the truth. But, you know, the Mormon Church didn't want anyone from Utah speaking out about that. So it goes very deep and very far and wide.
Yeah.
That's you can spend the rest of your life studying that, you know. I finally burned out. I still pay a lot of attention to things that pop up, but you know, you just, there are people far more advanced in the physics. I have a fair background in science, but I'm not a physicist or, you know, an explosives expert or anything, but, you know, I understand the general things that they're saying, and
I think that we're going to have to wait. You know, this conversation between Marilyn Butler, Josh Middledorf, Jerry Polakoff, and I on Saturday, we talked about, you know, Jerry Polakoff is an expert on the JFK assassination.
Okay.
And that's, you know, well over 50 years ago now. And we're still having revelations about that. And
yeah.
I think part of it is just going to have to be time, unfortunately. And maybe when the right person gets into the White House or into Congress, where they can open up some secret windows and drawers and doors to really show us what actually happened.
Yeah.
Well, there's some people in Congress now, you know, especially with Tulsi Gabbard and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and these other people that are coming in. You know, we just might see something, you know, that we haven't seen before.
I certainly hope so. You know, can't happen too soon. And are people able to call in to this program, Tim?
Excuse me?
Your listeners able to call in and ask questions?
Yeah, they're able to call in.
Okay.
Number is 9450.
they may want to say it again a little slower to be sure they hear it.
Yeah.
Tim, Say it again a little slower, maybe.
It's 516-453-9450.
Okay.
Yeah. So people
because
can...
Yeah, it sounds like you're getting ready to be doing one of these on your own.
Yesterday, a friend of mine that I've known for quite a while as a producer for a radio station, and actually in Mendocino, but her family is here in Salt Lake City, so she spends her time back and forth. But we interviewed Guy McPherson for about an hour and 15 minutes, and it was really excellent. And I'm waiting for Sherry to edit it. It'll probably take her 2 or 3 days, but that'll be appearing on Op-Ed, hopefully very, very shortly. Anything about climate change is very discouraging. There's no question about it. You know, talking about the abrupt climate change and, in this case, near-term human extinction, there's a whole lot of evidence leading towards that. And, you know, it's incredibly discouraging. And, I've been through the stages of this, Elizabeth Kubler-Ross's stages of despair, you know, or of grief. I think I'm finally at past the acceptance stage, although sometimes I still wake up in the morning and say, what the hell, you know, get totally depressed all over again. But it was, Guy was talking about the importance of really giving serious, serious thought to what you really, truly love, you know, what you're really interested in, and doing that in the whatever time you have left. You know, we all have an expiration date, no matter what age. You know, birth leads to death, so, you know, we're all going to die. But we had a very good discussion, part of it anyway, was about how to live your life now and be kind and helpful and friendly with people in your, we were using the term tribe, you know, but your friends and colleagues or whatever, which is always a good idea anyway. So it focuses your nose on the grindstone, so to speak, you know, as to what you're really going to do every day. I hope that's the outcome. We actually intend to do a series of interviews with him because so many questions came up, you know, that 1 hour, and he's very happy to talk about it. And he is one dedicated, straight up, but human, funny individual, you know, but a serious, serious conservation biologist. And very, very incredibly aware, you know, of everything, you know, politically and around the world. So an amazing character. There's many others, of course, but he's kind of at the top of my list in that department. So, we talked about the Sunrise Movement, or I forget the name of it now. And the Extinction Rebellion movement, and those kind of things. And you know, if there's truly no hope, what's the point? We talked about that in some great depth. And I pressed Guy on several points that I'd wanted to press him on, like you know, he's often talked about civilization is a heat engine, and you know, it kind of doesn't matter what we do, is, you know, we're adding heat. And I really pressed him hard on what's going on in solar and wind and geothermal and that kind of stuff. And definitely had him thinking a little harder about these things. And I heard answers from him that I hadn't heard before. I was very pleased with that. So I'm totally delighted to see the, what appears to me to be the face of a whole new generation rising up and with great impetus behind them. You know, of course, the students, you know, you can't go to college without getting locked into debt for the rest of your life, pretty much. You live with your parents till you're 30 or whatever, you know. So there's a lot of people being moved by reality, and they're coming to the fore without any inhibitions. I'm glad to see that. Anyone in a younger generation who complains, I can only say, well, one, yeah, I'm sorry for, you know, my generation and, well, the whole history of the human race and where it's gone and it seems to be going.
Yeah, I think it is the history of the human race, the whole human race. Not the human race, the recent history of white Europeans, really.
I'm sorry, what, say that again, that last phrase?
Blame it on the history of the last 500 years of white Europeans.
Yeah, well, you can do that, and you can put it right back to Adam and Eve if you believe in the Bible, you know, but it's like, okay.
No, I don't go back. I don't want to go back to Adam and Eve. I want to go back to the people who have attempted to inflict their beliefs and their culture for the purpose of exploitation on all of the rest of the human race.
Yeah, of course. I'm somewhat joking there, but absolutely. But meanwhile, what's the alternative? You got to look at the fact we are here now in the present, the only time we'll have ever, you know, and we've got to act from where we are, wherever we sit, and everybody's in a different place with different abilities and connections and whatever. And, you know, they should put their efforts and abilities to the best use they can in their own way. And that are happening now that are very good are under the wire. You don't see them, you know, unless you really go out of your way. And even then, there are individual acts of kindness all over the place every day. And, you know, they're not they don't make the headlines, you know. If it bleeds, it leads, so to speak. And, you know, some of the really good things that are happening don't get the lead for that reason. But stick with it. Do the best you can. What else can you do?
So. You know, this is the whole thing about the mainstream media trying to pit everybody against everybody else. You know, trying to divide us up in segments: white, black,
yeah,
poor, rich. You know. And what it does is it gets us fighting among ourselves, so we don't see what the big picture is.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, Rob and I have had our differences here and there, but you know, and they're somewhat significant, but they are significant. But at the same time, we have infinitely more in common, and it's important to focus on those common denominators more than anything for everybody. You know. I'm absolutely no Trump fan, don't get me wrong there, but I liked what he was saying about befriending Russia, pulling our troops back and things of that nature in cleaning the swamp. Meanwhile, he's the biggest monster in it, maybe, but nonetheless.
He's reinfested it with far worse predators than we had before.
He's put a terrible, terrible cabinet together. It's a crime. I voted for Jill Stein, just for the record here, but yeah.
So did I.
Yeah.
Okay. He's trying. He's pulling the troops out of Syria, and I don't even think his cabinet knew he was going to do that. That's pretty weird.
Yeah, it appeared that I was reading that today on Information Clearinghouse, and it appeared that he was going against guys like Bolton and Pompey and all these other nutcases that should be, you know, in an insane asylum.
When he does that, it gives me a little, not much, but a little bit of hope. I mean,
right.
You know, maybe he'll figure out that most of the world despises him and laughs at him and thinks he's a fool and a joke. And maybe he'll start trying to replace some of his advisors with somebody who actually advises him in a way that would help the world, but it's not likely. He's just too narcissistic and pathological, I think.
I think so, too. I have that distant thought, you know, on the horizon, on a way back burner, but, you know, it's like, you know, hope springs eternal, right? So.
Well, I remember when Paul Craig Roberts said that he was a better alternative to Hillary Clinton, and I couldn't vote for either one of them, so I voted for Jill Stein, which I just couldn't see either one of them in the White House, and now we have Trump, and he's sure living up to expectations.
It's tragic. I mean, you can laugh or cry. I do both, you know. But
my wife sits around YouTube and watches Trump bash.
I can't either. It's just too much, and we've gone overboard with this Russophobia. Rob, I mentioned this earlier that I was so pleased when the Berlin Wall came down, and we've had detente with Russia for 20 years, you know, even after the initial guy we put in there, I forget his name. But, you know, for us to get now be sanctioning them and doing all kinds of casting them as demons, it makes absolutely no sense at all. For anyone who looks like 2 inches beneath the surface, it's.
Well, you know, the mainstream media always says, "Oh, he was a KGB agent." Well, you know, George H.W. Bush headed the CIA. I mean, you know, it's kind of like the pot calling the kettle black. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
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 It's such a contradiction. In what's really going on, you know?
Yes. Yes. And it's really sad. Go ahead.
Yeah, and then he was eulogized as this great person, and he wasn't. And no president in the last 50 years has been worth a damn, really, if you really look into what they've done.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, I can't argue with that at all. You know, I liked Jimmy Carter at the time. I still like him. He's actually out there doing things right now with his wife. You know, they're working on Habitat for Humanity stuff, which is pretty amazing. But, you know, you get the wrong person in, the one who's, I forget his long name, but the one who got us in, wanted to create a Vietnam... The Soviet Union's own Vietnam in Afghanistan, which he did. He succeeded in doing, you know. And in that process, we were supporting Al Qaeda, training Bin Laden and his affiliates, you know. And you know, they were fighting for their own country. Those guys were, but you know, we started the whole thing under Jimmy Carter, so that was my best choice of presidents, you know, prior to JFK, maybe. But and you know,
Go ahead.
I was just saying, one problem you got to recognize with any president or any person: we're humans. And that's just a great strike against you right away, being a homo sapien, you know.
It's to the point now where I don't even believe we killed Bin Laden. You know,
I've had doubts about that all along. And even if he died or he was killed, it was not the way they said it happened. That was just total bullshit. It was just
why do you think that?
Because his body all of a sudden disappeared, and they said they threw it in the ocean. And, you know, I just, I just can't believe that. You know, it happened at a political point where they needed a little bit of good news. And if they were to kill Bin Laden, they would have shown us his body.
And it was like kidney dialysis, for Christ's sake, you know, in a freaking cave in Afghanistan. Well, pretty nice caves, I guess, with all the money they had. The Bin Laden family, which is closely related to the Bush family for decades. But, yeah, the whole story just never tracked for me at all. It just didn't make any sense. And I read interviews. I read about 5 or 6 interviews with him, by Robert Fisk, who interviewed him. This is before 9/11, and the guy was just standing up for his people very clearly. And then can't remember his name. Al Insuare, his second in command guy. He was a pediatrician, for crying out loud. And what pissed him off was that we had killed, with our sanctions, 500,000 children in Iraq. I mean, what
you're talking about,
how pissed off. Yeah.
And then not only did they kill him, he was an American citizen. A couple months later, they droned his son, who was from California. He was 16 years old, and he was just trying to find out where his father got killed. And this kill list that the president's supposed to have, where he drones people, you know, and AFRICOM and all the things that are going on in this world that are totally distasteful and against any Geneva Convention. And nobody's doing anything about it. You don't see people marching in the streets about all these wars that are going on. And the 55% of our budget that goes towards the military-industrial complex. I mean, what's going on?
Yeah, it's deep, deep roots in history. I really do believe that the deep state, or whatever you want to call it, the in situ bureaucrats run the show. You know, it's pretty clear to me. I've been working on airships, a new design for airships since 1995. My patent ran out 2 years ago, I think, on that. But there was an SBI, a Small Business Independent Research Grant, available. And I was working under the auspices of some Utah outfit for technology. And some of the people that were in the building I was with were familiar with the SBIRs, and they were really excited to say, oh, man, here's a thing from the Air Force. They want a vehicle that has all the characteristics of your airship. We should do an SBIR for you. I said, well, okay, you know. We'll go with that. And I, you know, was pumping them information for about 5 weeks. These people, 2 or 3 people, were working their asses off. And then a week before we were to send the actual grant in, we get an email from the Air Force saying what it's to be used for. It was to be used in Afghanistan for people on the ground, soldiers on the ground, to fly over the local terrain and find the actual, whoever was considered the terrorist that day, you know, and then locate them and then bring in the Hellfire missiles and the Predator drones and whatever the hell and blow them away. And when I saw that, I said, no, you know, I'm not going to do it. And a couple of people were very disappointed after all the work they put in. And it would have been $100,000 had we won it, which we probably would have done. Second round is $500,000, which we probably would have got. And then from there, it's like an open wallet from the government. And I just said, I'm not going to do it, you know. I don't want that on my tombstone, if I have a tombstone, you know. I just won't do it. So, you know, but so many people with these incredible technical skills get caught up in playing the game for the government, you know. Google and you know, I don't know about Bezos, but who's the, you know, the Google people, the YouTube people, whatever, you know, they're all
Facebook.
They've got contracts with the CIA, you know? It's crazy. So all of the talent is, it could be used for the good, is going to waste. And I understand, you know, people need a living to make a living. They got to do something to make a living, and that's what they're trained in, so that's what they do. But I had one guy, a guy I got to know through the airship that I worked on. He programmed the drones to fly 24/7 over Iraq. And a very cordial guy. All these people I've met, on a personal level, I tend to like them a great deal. And he was telling me, he said, I vowed when I got out of college, I was not going to work for the military. I was absolutely not going to do that. And that was the only job that came along. It fit my skills, so I did it, you know. But he wasn't proud of himself for that, but that's kind of how the show goes. It's a tidal wave. I don't know how to turn it back, but for everybody to speak their mind and do what they can from wherever they are.
Well, to me, it seems
I have a theory.
Go ahead.
I have a theory that most of the people in the world have these top-down ideas about power and their culture, you know, and they believe in American exceptionalism, their own religion's exceptionalism, and they think that the way to maintain their power, maintain their place in the world is with a mighty military. And we need to change that. You know, David Swanson has a wonderful book out now about American exceptionalism, basically showing that there's very little that we're exceptional at except having the biggest military and spending more on health care than anybody else.
Go ahead, Tim.
I was saying. Go ahead, Rob.
I think that what we need to do is we really need to rethink the way we look at our cultures, at our nation, and at nationalism. And we've got to start getting kids at a very young age to see a different, view the world with a very different perspective. And currently, kids are encouraged to believe in nationalism. They're encouraged to believe in American exceptionalism. You know, and it's probably, you know, it starts with, you know, saluting a flag. You know, this, you know, the idea of patriotism. You know,
yeah.
I think what we need is compassion and caring about each other and our communities. And that we need to be able to all together help each other and take care of each other. And instead, we invest an incredible waste of money and resources on the military. I think that the military leaders are parasites. And I think that that whole mindset is dangerous. And I think there's really got to be a change. I did an interview today with the ethics supervisor for the Philadelphia District Attorney's Office. And they're trying to change things. Larry Krasner, the new district attorney, got national attention because he's really trying to change the approach to dealing with crime and looking at what crime is. And basically my guest said that everybody at all different levels in the system, the prosecutors, the attorneys, the judges, the police, the prisons, they all have a hard time rethinking the idea of doing less in the way of putting people in jail because it doesn't work. And we keep on doing this insane thing with war in the military, and it doesn't work. It you know who it works for? It works for Boeing, and it works for Raytheon, and it works for Halliburton and these big companies. And that's what we need to deal with. We need to stop this insane dumping of literally trillions of dollars into nothing, into spending money that does not build our communities, that doesn't help our infrastructures, that doesn't help our young people, that doesn't help our future.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And this is what happens to all empires. And this is what happened to the Soviet Union. They got so top heavy with their military that their whole economy fell apart. And the same thing's going to happen with the United States. We don't produce anything but missiles and weapons and expendable shells that we can, you know, all these cruise missiles that cost $1 million a piece and that they have to keep replacing because we run out of them. And it's all about money. It's all about where our economy went. And our economy, instead of manufacturing things, all we do is manufacture weapons of war.
It is insane. It's absolutely insane. We need to simply realize, and how can we not realize this? I don't get how people cannot get this on a deep gut level. We are one species on one planet, one amazing planet, perhaps the only one like this. And they found a lot of, you know, exoplanets now, of course, but the conditions that allowed life to begin and evolve on Earth are nowhere to be seen and very hard to conceive of, even, you know, elsewhere in the universe. This is our home, for crying out loud. You know, other humans are our family. The family of man. It's, how hard is this concept, you know? It just makes no sense to see the divisions that are coming down. And that's a major tool of the power structure, to create the divisions and widen them and create more of them.
Well, my hope is, like, we're already among people in their 20s and younger, the white is in the minority. And I think that as we move, I think by 1940, whites will be a minority overall in this country. And I think that they have too much power. They abuse it. They're abusive. They're predatory. They are pathological. And I'm not saying, you know, it's every white person, but there's too much abuse of the power. And I think that, it's a lot of, I mean, we have so many problems with patriarchy, and we've got to do something to change the way our culture works. We've got to treat people so much better. We've got to stop the predation. You know, we've allowed civilization to create a safety zone for psychopaths and narcissists that give them such opportunities. You know, in the background here, I'm watching a TV show about predators, and I'm watching dogs take down an animal, and you know, that's what it's like in our culture.
Yes.
You've got bankers and financiers and salespeople and hunters, and they, whether they're hunters of animals or whether they're hunters of suckers and gullible victims, we have a culture and an economy where that is celebrated. And that's sick. And we need to change it.
Yeah. Yeah, I see that too. And if you look at Homo sapiens as another species of animal, which we are, you see that quite clearly. You know, that's how packs work. You know, that's how they survive. And it's
Homo sapiens spent most of their existence being decent, being having a peaceful relationship with each other and with nature.
Yeah. Yeah,
and
yeah,
that's changed.
Yeah.
And,
yeah,
and
yeah,
you know, when you think about it, I have major problems with civilization and what it's done to humanity. And, you know, for most of the world, civilization is 500 years old. It's not 10,000 years old. It's 500 years old. And I'm talking about Western civilization. I'm talking about the civilization that has dominated the world. You know, there was a civilization in the Western Hemisphere long before Columbus came. There were multiple civilizations here. I just did an interview with on my show with Michael Yellowbird, and he basically teaches indigenous studies, and he said that before Columbus came, there were 100 million people in the Western Hemisphere. Now that's North and South America. 100 million people.
Yeah.
Now,
yeah.
When Columbus came and the conquistadors came, they brought diseases that wiped out 90% of them.
Yeah.
And then they, to help it along, they brought blankets that had disease that were from dead people who had been diseased.
Smallpox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, so...
You know, they said that the area around St. Louis had a population of around 2 million, you know, before Columbus came. Yeah.
Yeah.
And they don't teach this in the schools. They don't teach any of it in the schools.
Oh, yeah. Like, you take Howard Zinn's A People's History of America, or of the United States, I guess it is. It's been banned from many schools. You know, these totally truthful books have been, you know, blocked out of the curriculum. It's crazy. When I was teaching, my last year teaching was in 2004, and it was in a West Side school here in Salt Lake, which is a lower income bracket population, and the Mormon Church, which is predominant here, has missionaries around the world, and so they've pulled in people from all around the world for decades, you know. So there's communities of various cultures here. And then with our wars around the world and CIA operations around the world, we drove these people out of their homeland, and a lot of them wind up in Salt Lake. And they happened to be in my classroom. When I left, in 2004, it had, at that time, 21 native tongues. Most of them were bilingual, at least, you know. Some weren't. Some could speak three and four languages, amazingly, before 12th grade, or before 12 years old. And they all got along. You know, we didn't have any, there were scrapes here and there. There were, of course, you know, various cliques and whatnot, but no violence to speak of, and there were gangs, you know, when they got into junior high and high school, but all the kids wanted was to get along with one another and be accepted by one another. That was their main ambition, you know, for the vast majority of them. And I think that's true of humans around the world. I mean, these were humans from around the world. You name a country, and I probably had a kid in my class from there. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, you know.
I hate to bust this up, but we got 60 seconds left. And okay. I just want to thank, you know, you, Daniel, Gary, and you, Rob Quill, for coming on the show. And, you know, if you want to share this on Facebook and tweet it out, you know, that'd be good. And, you know, I hope you guys come on again, you know, individually or together, I don't care. And maybe we can finish up some of this, because what we, you know, the things that we're talking about were fascinating.
Yeah, I'm pretty available.
That's
been
a pleasure.
Yeah, thank you very much. Appreciate it.
And thank you guys very much for coming on the show, you know, and I hope people listen to it and learn something from it.
Definitely.
Thanks for having us.
And, okay,
and,
thank
good
you.
Good talking to Rob. Okay, take care, you guys.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Okay, that was Rob Call and Daniel Geary, and, you know, it was a fascinating interview, and, you know, this is what baby boomers do, and, you know, maybe we can change the way people look at us. Okay, so that's it for me, and, you know, we'll be back next Wednesday, and maybe, and Saturday, I got Finney and Cunningham coming on. Okay, that's it for me. Good night.